and assistance from the DC Independent Media Center. In conjunction with the show, WPFW is planning a youth town hall meeting for live broadcast in August and additional special programs, including a live interconnect we hope to co-produce with WBAI on young Americans in a post-911 world. WPFW also co-partnered with the DC Indie Media Center for the station interim GM's original idea to present a youth workshop on new media, computer, radio, and internet-driven audio editing, which was a complete success. Other new Sunday programs include Night Wolf, a Native American public affairs program hosted by Jay Winter Nightwolf, a member of the Eastern Band Cherokee Nation. The program deals with everything from Native American history in the Chesapeake region of Virginia, D.C., and Maryland, to the Native American worldview with regard to situations like that currently involving the conflict between Palestinians and Israelis. We've also introduced African Journey, which is designed to create a bridge between Africa and Africa's descendants and children in the diaspora. African Journey marks the return to WPFW airways of CC Madupe Fadupe, formerly banned from the station by the previous GM. Public affairs programming during the week has been increased by 5 hours on WPFW with the addition of the following programs: Acentos, a Latino public affairs show, which is the first daytime program of its kind at WPFW, focusing exclusively on Latino issues. Challenging Corporate Power, hosted by Russell McIver, a progressive White House correspondent and author of the Corporate Crime Newsletter. The Peace Show with Terry Kester, a professor of communications at American University, who focuses on questions about human conflict and conflict resolution. And WPFW is proud to announce the return to its airways of Counterspin, the media watchdog affair. On April 20, as a follow-up to the superb national program, Pacifica's Perspectives on Peace, covering the day's anti-war, anti-racism rally on the National Mall in Washington, WPFW broadcast a live 3-hour radio town hall meeting, Voices for Peace, the community's view of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, which was wonderfully received by WPFW listeners. WPFW also has plans to introduce a political program for 20-something adults, the young progressives. Finally, we're working to fortify WPFW's coverage of local news with the development of The Messenger, a locally focused news and information program that we're designing to lead into the brilliant work of Free Speech Radio News. In conjunction with Norberto Martinez, a Latino member of the lab, WPFW is presently working with the Latino community, having formed a collective to create a bilingual nightly news capsule that will offer news with a Latin focus. WPFW is currently planning a radio town hall meeting that we call Neighbor to Neighbor, Embracing and Empowering DC's Latino Community. With regard to development, WPFW continues to think, step, and act outside of the box of creativity, making good decisions designed to increase the station's development income. The first adjustment included raising the bar for the spring membership drive from $350,000 to $500,000. At first, this generated some considerable shock among WPFW's on-air volunteers, but they all rose to the occasion. And Giant Steps 2 generated more than $400,000, a new record, with pledges being fulfilled in a rate of about 69%. Thank you. The DC Lab raised an additional $4,000 for the transmitter fund and is in the process of generating additional help. Following the fall drive, the Night Wolf program will take a caravan of about 10 buses filled with WPFW listeners down to a powwow in one of North Carolina's Cherokee tribal areas. This will be a fundraiser for the station as well. And during Thanksgiving 2002, WPFW will present the WPFW Community Action Awards at the historic Lincoln Theater, a fundraiser designed to honor local and grassroots community leaders in the D.C. metropolitan area. Now for some more serious news. With regard to operations, WPFW had a nightmarish month of May. For a total of three times within a two-week period, the station went off the air for between 3 and 19 hours. The first incident was somewhat mysterious, with a single fading in and out all day and then just suddenly going away for 3 hours. It finally popped back in after 3 hours. No cause, rhyme, or reason could be found for the interruption. We've also had the emergency broadcast system signal interrupt our programming without warning, and that's somewhat unprecedented. The second incident, which occurred on the very next day, was an act of God, so to speak, and the result of power failure during a violent rain and lightning storm. A Pepco, which is the electric company in Washington, D.C., power line was down by a fallen tree, and power was restored fully after 12 hours. The third incident was an act of man. The connection between the station and the transmitter site was interrupted due to a fiber optic cable being cut through by a careless Verizon telephone company construction crew. Transmission was not restored until after some 19 hours. And we're talking with Verizon now to redress this situation, Chair, and I would like to have the board actually help us address this situation because I think that we have grounds perhaps for a lawsuit there. The solution to these problems...
Yes, another lawsuit, yes. We're good at that.
Yeah, let's go get them.
Talk to Carol, yeah.
Free ISDN service for the entire Pacifica network for 20 years. And $1 million. The connection between the station and the transmitter site was restored after a nightmarish day. The solution to these problems involves taking measures to assure redundancy in power source and transmission connections. WPFW needs a backup generator. That's $20,000 plus installation and fueling service. And a microwave dish or antenna on the roof of the station itself, targeting the main antenna at the American University transmission site. The coaxial nitrogen leak continues, but we're watching that very closely, and we're fast on our way to raising the money to institute those repairs. WPFW is investigating the efficacy of moving the transmitters to one of two sites we've surveyed. Any move, however, will cost WPFW approximately or close to $100,000. Despite the fact that the station was blown off the air three times in May, WPFW has begun to turn a corner on its in-house technical problems. This is due to the diligent and dedicated work of our new chief engineer, Ken Mason. Ken's generated a lot of badly needed maintenance and repair work at WPFW, a technical platform that was virtually ignored for some 3 years, which is totally unbelievable. But we still have a lot of work to do in order to bring the station forward from the dark ages into the 21st century. Staffing. WPFW has made two recent hires of essential personnel since the last Pacifica National Board meeting. One included the chief engineer mentioned above. The other position was for program director, and this position has been filled by Ron Pinchback, a WPFW programmer, quite dedicated and creative, with 15 years experience serving as a program volunteer on WPFW. WPFW has a roster of more than 90 on-air programmers and other volunteers providing leadership in African, Caribbean news, morning, midday, and evening news, public affairs programming, and music programming. Future objectives. As I mentioned to the newly installed and much deserving executive director of Pacifica, Dan Coughlin, and the very, very beloved Verna Avery Brown, deputy executive director, when I first assumed this interim role as GM, I wanted to bolster the news and public affairs components of WPFW. These areas were intentionally neglected or scaled down by previous management to the detriment of the station and the listenership and the great chagrin of the lab. A number of other desperate issues soon absorbed all of my time and energy in terms of prioritizing, most importantly, the transmitter issue and securing the power and technology platforms of the station itself. There is now professional engineering activity focused not only on resolving these problems, but creating solutions that will make an absolute difference for the future. This assistance now allows me to personally focus on bringing the station's basic local news operation up to Pacifica's and my own standards. Also, WPFW desperately needs to increase its community outreach efforts. I've received many notes and phone calls from members of the WPFW listening community who, though extremely complimentary of the station, say they have just recently been introduced to or learned about WPFW or stumbled on us by accident while trolling the dial. What I'd like to propose for the station is a hard, targeted, limited advertising promotion campaign to increase public awareness of the station's existence. In a city and metro area which has such high residential turnover as Washington, D.C. does, it would be a prudent move, I think, to make an investment in some level of paid in-kind publicity to increase public awareness of the station and of Pacifica itself. Additionally, we have a goal of doing at minimum, four town hall meetings, that's one every quarter, and an additional public meeting held at a local high school auditorium that will focus on youth issues. We also have a desire to establish a monthly Q&A program allowing listeners to query the GM and plan to develop some kind of live weekly talk and public affairs program interconnecting WPFW with sister station WBAI. WPFW also has introduced a lab show, and we're very proud of that. Finally, WPFW, long considered a stepchild among the five sisters, is now a Cinderella story in the making.
And now Sam Husseini, who's the chair of the local advisory board.
Thank you. There's been significant progress at WPFW on several issues in recent months. Still, very real problems and challenges are before us. Interim GM Tony Augusto's considerable talents as an experienced media professional and his hard work, along with that of other WPFW staffers, have made the station move forward at a very critical time. These improvements occurred despite the fact that the previous management left behind a horrific work environment, a catastrophic financial situation, and disastrous technical infrastructure. The station is more accessible to listeners and the lab than it has been in years. Several new programs, some holding tremendous promise, have been initiated. Tony went through the list. The station covered the April 20th protests in D.C. and held a dialogue at Tony Augusto's initiation that evening on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict with plans for more such events. The community morning comments segment has been expanded to 5 days a week and offers the views of WPFW listeners on relevant topics of the day. News headlines are beginning to appear during the morning jazz programs. Despite all of this, we need to seriously address issues of mutual accountability between the lab and the station, and I'd like my remarks to be done in a spirit of challenging us all to be open about our problems and to move forward as swiftly as possible. Pacifica was founded as a voice for peace, while we now have an unelected president waging a permanent war. These circumstances should, I think, give us some urgency as to what we have to do to fulfill the mission of Pacifica now. Washington, D.C. is fundamentally the center of the empire, home to the U.S. government, shadow, and otherwise. Institutions, the IMF, World Bank, CIA, Pentagon, go down the list. It's also the home of a disenfranchised community that does not have meaningful representation in our federal government. Concrete steps. Concrete steps need to be taken to ensure that the vision of Pacifica is made real on a day-to-day basis. Despite serious steps, WPFW's day-to-day news and public affairs still constitute only about 5 hours each weekday, less on the weekends. Both the public affairs programming and the cultural program need to be strengthened in terms of quality, quantity, and critically how well they uphold the peace and justice mission of Pacifica. As discussed, the public affairs programming was largely, not fully, but largely decimated by the previous management. It's a perilous time here that if PFW produces more public affairs that does not live up to the radical vision of Pacifica, it risks alienating many listeners, whether they're jazz fans or people dedicated to the mission of Pacifica. From the information that I've received on the recent fundraising drive, the new programming that brought in the most members was what was activist-oriented and critical of government and corporate policies. For example, Spirit in Action, hosted by peace activist Damu Smith and Challenging Corporate Power, by Russell Mochiber. I think the listeners are telling us something. An election committee is taking up the task of educating WPFW listeners about the elections process. The first step in such a process needs to be more education and programming about the mission and history of Pacifica. This is particularly important in D.C. since D.C. censored, the previous mansion censored a lot of what other stations got. And unfortunately, many listeners who believe in the peace and justice mission of Pacifica have in effect been fired. Past management has alienated them. WPFW has made efforts to reach out to them, but needs to do more in that regard to ensure an elections process that's representative of the entire Pacifica community, and to attract those listeners back. Currently, the WPFW lab has 15 members, one of whom is a non-paid programmer. We meet monthly at the station. We've had extensive public comments and members of the public in various committees. Through the lab show, which premiered just this month, a process that Tony Regusters initiated, and it's a dedicated time slot. That is, it's a permanent time slot. The lab is hearing voices, more education, and beginning the process of educating the listeners about the mission of Pacifica. I'd like to, after my report, just go through very briefly some of the listener comments during the lab show. I think that might be informative to folks. Several lab members are working diligently on the GM search committee, program committee, the bylaws committee, community needs assessment committee is getting rolling, as well as others. The lab is also working with Tony Regusters, Latino Collective, and beginning Spanish English language programming. Such effort need to be broadened, and fundraising committee, I believe, has raised about $7,000 for the station. We've also held a teach-in at Martin Luther King Library, particularly to assuage the fears that the music is going to be have the plug pulled on it by the station. Community needs assessment report from last year determined that listeners wanted increased public affairs. We do, however, need to do a new community needs assessment report. There are a number of outreach opportunities unique to Washington, D.C. Conventions of various civic and political groups pose an incredible opportunity to spread the word about Pacifica, to table, to get members, form alliances. Simultaneously, in preserving the independence in the editorial broadcast, Pacifica and WPFW can cover such functions. Such activities are not possible now. There's no pamphlet for WPFW, nor is there a news gathering operation. The lab should help take the lead in producing one and finding ways to help with the other. A major job of the lab and the station management is to be promoting dialogue between the lab and the staff and the programmers. Some lab members are beginning the process of planning social and brainstorming meetings with programmers. None of the non-program lab members have attended or been invited to, as far as I know, staff meetings at the station. I think that type of process would also help. At times, the lab has been excluded from crucial decisions. For example, a program director was hired without the lab knowing that such a process was going on, much less being part of that process. Tony Regusters has assured that that will not happen again. Nonetheless, I haven't received a report about what the PD hiring process was precisely. Additionally, the method of programming decision-making needs to be clarified. There are lab members on the program council, however, it has met not in a totally regular manner, and indeed is an ad hoc program council, that needs to be addressed. Oops. Some of the communications problems stem from a lack of a healthy relationship between the two, and the lab needs to be shifting from a wartime lab to more of a constructive dialogue with the station. The lab, by virtue of assessing and evaluating the station, needs to point to shortcomings that the station has, but it also needs to be doing serious outreach. I was very glad to hear about what WBAI is doing, and I think we can learn a great deal from that. To be tabling at events, to be taking the initiative in non-broadcast related activities such as internet community radio, training for volunteers, and so on. Focusing on specific issues, I think, would help, such as militarism, economic inequality, bigotry, and democratic issues, particularly regarding D.C. I'm glad to hear of an upcoming regular GM program. I think that that'll help matters tremendously. And in addition, the lab facilitated the station working with the IMC, and I'm delighted that that'll continue. However, the IMC's space is closing, and I think that it's crucial that the station try to play some role to buttress the role of the IMC, which is literally down the street, in facilitating that. WPFW should, of course, continue its commitment to jazz and blues and other music, which currently constitute the majority of the on-air time, and relate heavily to the African-American experience born out of oppression in the United States. The way the music is presented, however, should highlight that history of oppression and how it relates to policies today. Local artists should be highlighted more. Other music from other traditions, particularly oppressed groups from around the world, should be added to the mix. Interrelations between musicals' traditions should be highlighted to communicate the common humanity of everyone on the globe. Finally, a tremendous opportunity exists for WPFW in Pacifica to have programmers attending news conferences in D.C., at City Hall, the White House, the Pentagon, the State Department, and so on. They could be asking the tough questions and doing important muckraking. If we strive for that vision, I'm confident that listeners will support the station in every way possible. This would also be a method of free publicity, since news conferences are aired on other major media such as CNN and C-SPAN. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you, Sam. We have two people who signed up for comments in this section, and hopefully I'll pronounce both your names right. Jawara Hunter. I'm just going to call on them so they line up. Jawara Hunter and I'm not sure how you pronounce his name. Mariama? Mariama Orange. Okay, David, do you want to say something quickly?
Yeah, I just had a concern and a comment. This is David Furtick from Southern California. Although I am also from Washington, D.C. from many years ago. And I'm concerned that the lab, the local advisory board in Washington, was unaware of the program director hire process. And I'm concerned that the station management might not have made use of this resource. I mean, using the lab and helping to seek out and evaluate all the various candidates. And I think that that's a process we need to really make sure is strongly considered throughout the system. I also want to comment, Washington, D.C. is, and with all due respect to Berkeley, I believe the most progressive political subdivision in the United States, but we don't know about it because they never get to vote on anything. And I think that it's so valuable a resource for Pacifica, being so progressive, a community of homes, of people, not just of governmental entities, that its strength is not just in its resource and proximity to so many oppressive institutions, but also in so many flourishing neighborhoods and communities. And I want to commend the management and the lab in the progress that you've made, and I just want to thank you very much.
Okay,
thank you.
Okay, so.
Yeah, my name is Jawara Hunter. Is this mic on? Anybody hear me?
Yeah,
Jawara Hunter, I'm from D.C. I'm a product of Harlem, grew up across the street from the projects, and then moved to D.C. later on. So I've been in two colonies. Pretty much. The person who started off talking for KPFA, the local advisory board person, said that their process of reporting was a collaborative process. Their local advisory board process was collaborative. I must say that the report that Sam gave just now was not. I'm going to say a couple of things because I felt that I had to represent people from D.C. who I knew, so I asked them to give me some comments. And I'm a physician trying to become a healer. I'm a lay reader in public health, and my issues are about the health of the people of D.C. Let me say also that the local advisory board in D.C. right now does not represent the people of D.C. It is approximately one-third black. The Arbitron says that the listenership is two-thirds black. There's a problem there. The African American community is in great need of healing, and souls of black folks. W.E.B. Du Bois prophetically noted at the dawn of the 1900s, the problem of the 20th century would be the problem of the color line. Du Bois also went on to identify that what black people needed was work, culture, and liberty simultaneously, not separately. Since the writing of that very important work, racism and white supremacy still reigns as the number one scourge of the world. In the context of African Americans, racism and white supremacy is still orchestrating the destruction of black families, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. Racism and white supremacy has had its most profound impact on the health and physical and mental health of African American people. The negative health impact was first documented by Du Bois in the Philadelphia Negro in 1899. I quote, "The most difficult social problem in the matter of Negro health is the peculiar attitude of the nation toward the well-being of the race. There have, for instance, been few other cases in history of civilized people where human suffering has been viewed with such peculiar indifference. Nearly the whole nation seemed delighted with the discredited census of 1870 because it was known, it was thought to show that Negroes were dying off rapidly and the country would soon well be rid of them. So recently when attention has been called to the high death rate of the race, there's disposition among many to conclude that the rate is abnormal, unprecedented, and that since the race is doomed to early extinction, there's little left to moralize an inferior species." Gunnar Myrdal, commissioned to write An American Dilemma in 1940. I'm told my time is up. I came 3,000 miles to say some things. Please bear with me.
We would like to hear your comments.
I came 3,000 miles.
Related to the
okay, what I'm trying to tell you in a nutshell is the health of people, our people, is terrible. I'm going to skip a lot. The report of the Secretary's Task Force on Black Minority Health was noted to say that by 1980 there were 60,000 excess deaths in the black community. 60,000. By 2000, An American Health Dilemma, written by Byrd and Clayton, noted the gap was widening. There were now 91,000 excess deaths. The recent report by the Institute of Medicine from 2002 documents the persistence of a two-tiered health system when income, access, and insurance are similar. The last thing I'm going to say is this. There's a report that recently came out written by Human Rights Watch about the disparities in the drug war incarceration statistics. Black men are sent to prison on drug charges in some states at 27 to 57 times the rate of white men. Minnesota, the state with the largest with the lowest incarceration rate, has 121 prisoners per 100,000. I repeat, 121. The District of Columbia has 1,600. 13% of the black male population has lost a franchise because of felony convictions. There are 4,600 black men in prison per 100,000 black men in the population versus 482. 4,600. In D.C., the black male life expectancy is comparable to the U.S. of the 1920s. An 80-year lag, which is expected to worsen. The problem in D.C. is that we have to have a station that addresses the needs of the people, is where they are, and helps them to heal. I have several statements from people. I'm not going to make all of them. Askia Muhammad, Acklin Lynch, A.B. and Karen Spellman, Brother R, Lou Marshall, Jewel Johnson, Tom Porter, Ron Clark, stalwarts in D.C., giving support to Tony Augustus and the job he's done. If you want to see them, I'll be glad to share them with you. Yes. Dr. Martin Luther King's last statement. We must learn to live together as brothers and sisters or perish as fools. Thank you.
Thank you. Just before you go, yes, I think we would like to see that material. So if you could share with us, that would be great. Yes. Next.
My name is Mariama Orange. I'm on the WPFW Local Advisory Board. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me now? Okay. My name is Mariama Orange. I'm on the WPFW Local Advisory Board in Washington, D.C. And I think that some of the issues that have come up regarding the different reports and collaborative effort and the process in terms of the hiring of the program director speak to the situation that we are in now in terms of processes that need to be defined very clearly. As Tony McGregor spoke before, the process that he was going by was in terms of a previous process that was in place, and he did not have other information. So as we go about developing these operating guidelines and station manuals, these are things that we need to keep in mind. So one of the things that I want to focus on is in terms of the role of the labs. I think that we need to have specific roles defined in terms of what we will do from now until the end of December to help along the process that has been in place. For example, the purpose of the lab is to be a link to the community. Therefore, the lab should reflect the diversity of the community, and any recommendations should be substantiated by data from highly publicized community needs assessment. Also, the labs need to develop a strategic plan from now until the end of December. In making various recommendations, saying you should do this or you should do that, we need to make sure that we have outlined our role, our part, and our commitment as a lab in making those shoulds happen. And also, the lab right now needs to be focused on helping to develop the structural framework and processes for a smooth transition to the elected labs. We need to develop accurate and appropriate assessment models. For example, I think that looking at things from the level of hours of music versus hours of news creates false dichotomies. I think that we need to define it in terms of key values. For example, promoting a culture of revolution through music and the arts. There could be a music program that involves the youth and has them direct their creative energies in a positive outlet. That is, to me, is considered public affairs. So I think that when we look at this whole thing in terms of mission-based programming, that we need to be sure that we have appropriate assessment models, and that's basically what I wanted to say.
My name is David Welsh, and I'm actually a listener in the KPFA listening area, and I have a question for the brothers from Washington, D.C. In spite of the wonderful programming which we have in the Pacifica Network, including expressing a lot of alternative points of view and points of view against the viewpoint being expressed by the government, when it comes to news, we often have we being used to describe the United States, the pronoun we. And in some cases, for instance, in the case of the war on Yugoslavia, reporting on the war on Yugoslavia, on the news I'm talking about, a lot of times it sounded like NPR. In other words, kind of like reflecting the government point of view. And I think this is something that really needs to be corrected, because Pacifica should be representing the people's point of view and an alternative point of view, and not the government point of view on these critical issues of war and peace. And of course, Pacifica does that in its programming overall. I'm talking about the news. And I was wondering, in Washington, D.C., in the heart of the nation's capital, in the belly of the beast, do you face this problem, and how do you deal with it?
Well, we're in the process right now of redeveloping and revamping WPFW's entire news gathering and presenting capability. After 5 months, we're still trying to pull all this together. We don't have all of the resources that we need, but we feel that we do have the talent available to us, and there are organizations such as Free Speech Radio News, which we want to co-partner with to help us and train some of our station volunteers, and the D.C. Independent Media Center, which is currently working with us to help us upgrade our news presentation. I understand completely what you're saying. I'm a newsman. That's my background, news producer. And I left mainstream news because I got tired of being a part of, well, I can't use that word on, crap. And I found that I'm finding that the experience that I'm having right now is the most rewarding professional experience that I've had as a communicator in media in much of my career, which spans 35 years. I'm having the opportunity to do some things that come out of my heart and really reflect the brightest light of intellect and truth. And I'm very grateful for that opportunity. We will be a beacon in Washington, D.C. WPFW is going to shine, believe me.
Real briefly, there's been substantial progress even without the initiation yet of a regular news department. It's starting to happen, and less of the sort of rip and read off the AP wire. That substantially decreased. If I could real quickly, Leslie, just go through some comments that people had on our first lab show, or are we running way behind?
Well, we are running so far behind that I'm not sure what we're going to do about it.
Okay,
you know,
I'll
rather
include
not.
That
if you have
report.
Them and can circulate them to us,
bye.
I'm sure people are interested, but not read them. Which brings me to our next point. I want to thank Tony and Sam and the comments that were made. We do need to move on to WBAI. We are, as I said, running extremely late. I think what this means is that we have to push lunch back and we have to shorten the lunch break. I don't want to break. I want to finish the station reports before we break, because otherwise we will never get in to the finance questions and the other questions. It's important that we get all this feedback and input from people. You ask us, you demand of us that we pay attention to things, but then we don't have the time at the meeting to get to those items. So we really need to do this next two stations in an extremely disciplined way. The station managers have given us very thorough written reports. If you could just highlight the most important things from those reports or any additional things, and the same with the lab chairs, if you can get right to the most critical points. Again, if anybody wants to sign up to speak, I don't know where Gail went, our sign-up person, but there she is over here for WBAI, and then after that will be KPFK. So we'll start with Valerie Van Isler over here on my left, the station manager at WBAI in New York.
Thank you very much, and greetings to everybody here and everybody across the country, all of whom are devoted and interested in the future of this network, and that's what we are here about today. Many thanks for the extraordinary support and generosity of our listeners and the outstanding work of our staff that has helped us every step of the way through a very difficult time when we came into a bankrupt situation, a debt-ridden and a demoralized institution. Despite the difficulties there and the real climate of turbulence that met us in back in January, I believe that we have made some constructive steps, have done some positive work, and this is most of all a tribute to the extraordinary work of the staff, the listeners, who have helped us along the way during these first 6 months. I think also that although our difficulties are far from over, there is a glimmer of light at the end of this tunnel and hopefully a basis of hope for our future. We completed membership drives in February, as we reported at the March board meeting, of a record $1 million. That was phenomenal. We went into a membership drive in May, and we brought in $900,000 during that drive. This was, by the way, about a 36% increase, our spring drive, over what they did last year. And to date, we brought in an astonishing $2.2 million in listener support. That is 21% increase over the same period of last year. Yeah. We have goals. In New York, we have to have big goals because we have big expenses. And our goal this year was $2.5 million. At this point, in mid-June, we've raised $2.2 million. We are about $300,000 away from making our listener support goal. That is a phenomenal achievement. Kudos to the staff, kudos to the listeners, the members, and all the support that we have gotten from this board and especially from the national office. We have some summer funds and some plans to achieve that goal by the end of September 30th, including what we call a mini drive. We have some off-air projects, telemarketing, development, and some direct mail that will, in fact, hopefully bring us home. I believe it, and the staff believes it, because we believe the listeners will come through for us as they always have. The increase in our membership base from the low of less than 13,000 back in January to what we have now is about 18,500 members represents over 30% increase in the base that is so important for station finances, support, outreach, and just station operation. We've also increased our renewal rate up to nearly 48%. We have brought in contributions from major donors, over $30,000. I've continued to do the double duty of general manager and development for major donors, renewals, direct mail, and our website, which we reclaimed, has brought in over $14,000. So we are making that work for us, and it was very powerful during the two pledge drives that we did. Despite the success, however, the fiscal crisis for WBAI is far from over. It permeates everything in terms of operating expenses, debt for this year, the operating work, and for the expenses of the past year. BAI will probably have a deficit at the end of this year, and I believe and I hope it will be less than $100,000. Right now, even in our budget, it's about $85,000. But that would be an extraordinary accomplishment if we ended at that level. I hope, in fact, we are able to balance everything out. But it's, again, a tough year with a lot of expenses and all the back thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars in back bills which we had to pay means we also have to be realistic. But there is a difference that we've been able to meet challenge after challenge, and I think we are on the right road to recovery. Finances are just an incredible key because more damage was done at BAI than any other station. There have been changes in staffing on our personnel matters. We've made several during the six-month period. As we stated in the March report, we offered a severance package to across the board to all staff. About eight people took it. Some did not. And those who did not have also filed charges against us. We have also responded through our counsel, and it may go to arbitration, although there already seems to be some legs for doing this another way. We filled some key positions which were mission critical, bilateral transfers, and we talked about this with the staff, we talked about this with the lab, we talked about this with the national office, and in order to carry out our responsibilities, we had to make those appointments, and we did. The overall climate at the station has changed considerably. I believe it is more positive because of the extraordinary collaborative work done by the staff, helped by the lab during the past fund drives, and the evidence of the incredible amount of support that has been given to us, is evidence of that. Most of the time, not so much lately, but in the beginning, we have had to be that calm eye at the center of a storm, because the turbulence was powerful every single day. We've opened talks with AFTRA for the paid staff. That's the union that they chose. They have been very productive to date. Many, many points of agreement. We hope to finish up that contract over the past the next few weeks. We have about 33 regularly paid staff. We have gotten information to them about seniority increments, which were not paid by the previous administration for 2.5 years. The entire fiscal year 2000, when they refused to honor or even acknowledge there was a contract, 2001, when they refused to pay it, and 2002, we've come back, and we have caught up with all of these and gotten back on track by the end of May. That did cost us some money, about $10,000, but it is an acknowledgement of the work and the commitment of the staff, the fact that we keep our commitments. We say we're going to do something. We have to get in there and actually produce and do it. The unpaid staff producers have also been in meetings over the past many months, and they have been working on securing their interest, very important, and choosing a union to represent those interests. And at this point, I believe it will be UAW. We will go back and have meetings with them and work out their recognition so that their interests too are protected. And there are over 125 programmers, unpaid producers, at the station at this time. There are several positions that are open at the station, and as a general manager there, in transition, I have only made temporary or interim appointments. I have not made any regular appointments. Every appointment, however, has been posted, has been noticed, put on our website, put on our walls, and resumes and candidates asked to apply. General manager search is now ongoing. There's a public affairs director, a position that is open, an operations director, development assistant, a development director, and a morning show host. During the past 6 months, the thing that we do is not make shoes or dresses. We make programming. We make ideas. We have been covering the major stories, the big issues, and the local concerns, everywhere from the West Bank to the brink of a war situation in India-Pakistan, to voices like Noam Chomsky, human rights after September 11, the impact of the Patriot Act, a water series done by our morning show. We've also had exceptional coverage live from East Timor on their Independence by Democracy Now! And that happened during our May membership drive, and we missed Democracy Now! Deeply and greatly. They were there, but in a reduced presence, because the previous drive, they had raised over $200,000 for WBAI alone. And you will see later in the reports that they have raised over $1 million for this network just since January. So an extraordinary achievement, outstanding work. We thank them very, very much. Amy Goodman is in the audience. We've continued to work on programming reallocations, programming changes. At the last board meeting, we reported that programming changes were being worked on by the program director and by the program council. They've been meeting to look at our schedule, bringing in new voices, redress problems from the previous year where the schedule was a checkerboard, if that, and provide greater service to our listeners, which is the bottom line. These changes were deliberated, discussed, and they did go into effect in early June after our May drive. They include opening up the morning stream after Democracy Now! To public affairs programs about city politics, the environment, Native Americans, youth and student voices, international discussions, gay and lesbian rights, natural medicine, and others. We also reinvested our schedule with arts and cultural programming in the afternoon and a stronger public affairs lineup in the drive time right before our news hour. After the news hour, the public affairs focus continues with labor, housing, international reporting on the Middle East, Asia-Pacific Rim, African continent analysis, together with technology, education, and a new talk format on the global VAC experience. Some relocations were made in the weekend, including returning La Nueva Alternativa to the air, few changes made in the overnight, and breathing room created in that schedule so that we could create specials. These changes were important and necessary, but also important and necessary were more communication, more discussion, and more consultation across the line there. This is just phase one. We've learned a lot going into phase two. All of these things should be coming in a much stronger, clearer, more transparent way across WBAI. During the last quarter, the program director and the program department heads, and the program director is here, Bernard White, will determine how things are settling in, whether or not these new programs and these new voices are really working. They'll monitor and review the changes in the programs, provide feedback to the station, the staff, and the lab as we end our year in September. The key objective is to provide communication and feedback, as well as mentoring and coaching to all the producers so that everyone is working toward improving our standards, improving our service to the community, and improving the overall listener base. We do it because that's our job on the programming line. Our new schedule, by the way, is on the website. We have done regular reports to the listeners every single month since we returned in January. We will continue to do that. The work for June 19th was the most powerful national programming that I believe we have done in a very long while, but especially this year with the return of the transition and the new day for Pacifica. That kind of work is the basis for going on into September with the third national day, which can only get stronger, make us stronger, and really deliver the powerhouse programming that Pacifica is capable of and our history really calls us to do. In the March report, I talked about the equipment and our needs for it. So we allocated about $25,000, a little bit more than that, We made a commitment to get equipment in there like CD players, tape recorders, etc., which was so neglected. We had no parts for them. They were beyond repair. We put that equipment in before the May drive so that when people went on the air, there was the equipment to do that drive, improve the sound, and again, improve the service to our listening audience. We worked on special projects once again around the September 11th tragedy. We are seven blocks away from the World Trade. We've met with government agencies, SBAs, and banks. We have submitted proposals. We will continue to seek every option on that front. Our local advisory board did a wonderful thing, and we worked very closely with them the first months of return. Almost every day there was one meeting or another or one committee or another by creating a membership outreach campaign. That work is ongoing. The lab members are now engaged on the bylaw committee. They're also engaged in the GM search committee. The lab hosted an on-air event, not an on-air but off-air event for WBAI to reinstitute our program guide. Their continuing work and dedication is extremely and deeply appreciated from the chair to every board member. And the chair is here with us, that's Miguel Maldonado. But we have a lot of work to do in opening up communication, reasserting the need for discussion, consultation, and collaborative ways of working together. And I've heard it with the other reports. We have a lot more to return to that agenda ourselves. And we must do that, and we will do that in the coming months. In addition, we've worked with different organizations to create a art exhibit at WBAI on our walls, and we call it a community of quilts. We're looking forward to that and changing that exhibit to bring in the arts community as part of the outreach work over the next few months as well. And finally, I'm still working there as general manager, but the transition process is real. It's underway. I hope to be assisting the national office at some time when the general manager search for BAI is completed. And until that time, my commitment stands to do all we can, day after day, week after week, month after month, to solve the problems together, to work together, to collaborate, to make our budgets, to bring in the money that we need to operate that station, and all of it to reclaim the original vision of independent media, which is the Pacifica mission. And that mission is about ideas that change our lives. It's about experiences and people's stories that inspire us. It's about a vision that constantly guides us, like a North Star, that points the way to greater freedom, more equality, and greater justice, because that's part of our mission. Pacifica mission is a tool and a weapon. It's both a pen and a sword. It's both a journalistic vision and a political mandate to do the most revolutionary act in an age of deception such as we live in, and that's tell the truth in service to the people.
Thank you again for all of your hard work and for that presentation. Miguel Maldonado is the chair of...
And you are listening to KPFA or KPFB Berkeley or KFCF Fresno, KPFK in Los Angeles, WBAI in New York. And also, let's go to Mr. Maldonado.
Before I start my report,
WBAI,
I
local advisory board.
Maybe abuse the power that I'm going to be here. And I just want to mention that I heard that Debbie Ederson is stepping out as the chairperson, or he did step out as the chairperson of KPFK in Los Angeles. And I just want to take 30 seconds to really recognize all the contribution that Debbie Ederson made during the whole struggle of Pacifica. And I had the opportunity to work with Debbie Ederson, and I hope that Debbie Ederson continue with his contribution to create a better network, to create a better Pacific in the future because of his experience and because all the knowledge that he brings to our network. And I just want to recognize in 30 seconds that Debbie Ederson, I learned something from him, and I hope he learned something from me.
And, we'll be hearing from David also.
Since I don't know what the deal was here, so I just want to recognize that and welcome the new chairperson from KPFA Lab, Lydia Branson. Let me go into trying to break this down in terms of the report and things that we've been trying to do in WBAI signal area in New York. And I'm trying to give you some idea about the committees that the lab is working. Trying to give you an idea about the labs and the listeners and working with Zone Listeners Group and how that relationship is taking place. I also will mention a few things about the lab and ethnicity, and also the lab and relationship with, besides the general manager, but also other departments in WBAI that I think are important. And so far, somehow, as the people noticed in some of the report, we always concentrate on the relationship with the general manager, and I think that it's important to point out other departments that sometimes, in my case, I don't even have idea that other departments exist in our radio station, because it's really hard to see that reflection in the programming that is taking place in some of those, and I don't know the cases other people experience in other senior areas, but in my case, at WBAI. And so that's basically what I'm going to mention in terms of the report. I'm going to start saying that when we had the last meeting in LA, I say goodbye to Valerie Bansheiler, and because she was supposed to step out as the general manager, and at this point we haven't get a new general manager. So I don't know if I should say goodbye and wait for the next meeting to see what's going to happen. But in terms of the search committee for general manager, I think that we are getting real, real close to get a new general manager. And I think the lab is basically heading and sharing that process with the other 16 people who are part of that committee. And I know it's a big committee. But based on the dynamic that we are confronting in those places, and we're trying to be not only democratic, if I may use that word, but to me it doesn't have that much meaning. If you don't give the people opportunity to participate, especially with the contest and the dynamic that's going on in each inner area, and that's why we ended with a huge committee that maybe in the future we can work it out amicable to how we can reduce those committees that we can move things really quickly. But unfortunately, that's the case. And we're trying to have everybody to have a little bit of participation and input in the search committee, because I think the general manager is a very important and political position, and I think that everybody should be agree who the general manager should be. Also, they are other there was an appointee in WBAI, for instance, the public affairs director. And we had the opportunity to find out through listeners that there was a new community affairs director. And that was something that really creates some kind of some problem in the way that that was really done. And the fact that the person, the job description that I heard in some meeting, that was something that creates some kind of inconvenience, especially for me, because I thought it was done, and the fact that the person that we're choosing, who is somebody who was there during the whole struggle, making contribution to your twist regime, and I thought that was something that politically was a wrong move, and some of the people in the lab was really upset with those kind of decision, because I thought that political was it hurt the lab and hurt everybody that was involved in this struggle. And I just want to point that out. In terms of the other committees, like the outreach committee, which is basically concentrate in the membership campaign, trying to bring new listeners to WBAI. And I should mention that at this point, there's about 150 people contributing with that committee, going out in the community and making presentation and develop leadership and making contact with community groups. That I think this is something that we should support and keep working, because I think that in the long run, even if we are not bringing as many members to WBAI, the fact that we're making contact with the people is a deal that we got no way to lose, because if you don't get a member or to subscribe to WBAI, you got somebody who's going to be a listener from that day, starting that day. So, you know, when you go into the community, it's a deal that we need to approve and to support, because you got a lot to learn and learn and know all the community. In terms of the lab and ethnicity that the lab represent, one of the things that I have to report here, that we make a deal with the listener groups and independent listeners that we want appointed more members in the lab, and we're trying to keep that commitment, but at the same time, we are working with not that many people that we would like to And we're trying to have all the ethnic groups that we can to represent or to reflect what Niger population is all about. Sometimes it's really hard because it's really hard to bring friends, but we would like to bring people who got some commitment with the community and people who also can make some commitment to Pacific and to WBAI and people who are willing to work and not really bring people because they are they belong to Asian community, but at the same time people who got that commitment. And we got people from different ethnic groups, and sometimes they drop out and leave us in a situation that we need to have the representation of different communities, which is something that we really pay attention, and it's something that I always